Coming up next on Tech News Today, WhatsApp might be leaving your deleted messages on your device in a database file for someone to grab. Isn't that neat? Also, ride sharing has had no effect, apparently, on reducing drunk driving fatalities. Microsoft is shedding more of its smartphone staff. How much room you're going to need for your brand new PlayStation VR when you get it in a few months? And say goodbye to facial recognition. Disney is going to track you by your shoes. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1566, recorded Friday, July 29th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we and you talk about technology, the news, all the stuff that happens today with people who are passionate about technology. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Today really feels like a Friday. My goodness. My goodness. But there's good news today. We'll start off by saying happy Systems Administrators Day. Sysadmins, you know who you are, and we salute you.
Mm-hmm. I'll salute too. You. Thank you.
We took System Admin Administrators Day and we made it awkward. Yes.
We did? Is that awkward?
I don't know.
We couldn't do it without
you.
You
know what? I had self-doubt that I was saluting properly. So right. I was like, yeah, I'll just... Then I hide. That was me anyways.
All right. Should we get to the news?
Yeah. I think we probably should.
Security expert Jonathan Zdarsky warns that WhatsApp might not be as secure as you think it is. In a blog post today, he writes that WhatsApp leaves a forensic trace of your chats even after you've deleted, cleared, or archived them. To be more specific, deleted SQLite records remain intact in the database. I'm not sure what that means, but hopefully some of you out there know what that means. And don't think switching to iMessage will solve this problem, because Apple's deleted messages leave forensic traces too, says Zdarsky. He says it may even be worse, but he also says do not start panicking yet.
So, but panic!
No panic. Don't panic.
WhatsApp users.
Don't panic. If a hacker would need physical access to your device in order to get these,
With my reading through it, it's a database file essentially that's stored on the device that's, you know, kind of managing these things. Like when you think of it like a disk and you delete something from a disk, you're not necessarily deleting it. You're removing it from that database or removing it from, you know, being able to be found. But that data might still exist somewhere until it gets overwritten or something like that. From what I can understand, this is kind of similar to that database file that's associated with the WhatsApp service that you're using. You know, part of that is managed on your device. And so, you know, whether or not your phone is encrypted, that doesn't matter, because that's just all about communication from your device up to WhatsApp. You still have that file kind of hanging out on your phone. And if what's happening when you delete a message, for example, is that is simply just being removed from your ability to see it from within WhatsApp, but it's still kind of sticking around in the database file. And yeah, if a hacker has the ability or someone has the ability to obtain access to your device, they can pull that database file off and they have not only your WhatsApp history, you know, conversations that you expect to be there, but also the ones that you thought you deleted.
Right. So if I've learned anything from Mr. Robot, it's that just stick the phone in the microwave and you're good.
Oh, yeah. That might work in this case, unless you've done any sort of backup, because that's another challenge here. Maybe not from a hacker perspective, but from, let's say, a warrant request or something. If you've done any backups that might upload that to iCloud, iCloud's unencrypted. Mm-hmm. So if you back up your iOS device through iTunes, that's a desktop backup, and iTunes actually does give you controls to manage whether that backup is encrypted, but iCloud does not. So your database file could then be up in the cloud as well, on iCloud, unencrypted, totally open for some sort of seizure of some sort. You know?
Right, so by legal authorities, like someone with a warrant
sure.
as well.
Exactly.
So Zdarsky says this isn't malicious or intentional on WhatsApp part, but WhatsApp does say that deleted messages are permanently removed from your phone, so that's not exactly accurate.
Yeah. I don't know. How often do we believe when a company says, yes, if you delete it, it's gone? Like, you know, think of companies like Facebook or whatever. They keep everything. Mm-hmm. And they have massive amounts of servers in order, you know, specifically to store everything. So that even if you decide to come back 4 years later, you can still get this stuff that you thought was deleted. So I suppose there's a little bit of that thinking in this, like, okay, yeah, you delete it, but is it really gone? Do you really think that it's gone? Like, does it behoove WhatsApp or Facebook to actually remove all of that data? I think as a user, you hope, you expect that it is, but I think I'm just becoming cynical now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, eh, even though you're telling me it's deleted, it's not.
Yeah.
It just seems to be the way it's going. Instagram is about to tackle abusive speech on its network by giving users the keys to controlling their own content streams. Not only will users be able to filter their streams, they could go totally nuclear and turn off comments completely on their own personal posts, of course. Users will also be able to create personalized banned words lists to keep comments that include those words out from the very beginning. And right now, so just any user can't see this right now. It's really being rolled out specifically to very certain high volume accounts. And then over the next couple of weeks is going to roll out to more high volume accounts. And then eventually, I think once they've kind of got it all working and figured out and everything, they're going to roll it out to everybody.
They suspect that Taylor Swift already has this because she, you know, she got attacked, as everyone knows, and then like snake emojis like crazy in her Instagram, and and then some of them mysteriously disappeared. But you always had the ability to delete any comment in Instagram, and same with Facebook. Like, in, you know, that's one of the things that makes mm-hmm. it different from Twitter. Like, you can't delete things that people say about you on Twitter. I mean, you can't. But on your, like, Instagram and Facebook sort of functions more like a blog. Like, you know, when mm-hmm. we used to have our own blogs, like, we could decide whether we were going to allow comments or not. And, you know, some posts we just sometimes decided, hey, I'm just going to close comments on this one because I don't really care what you have to say. So it's similar to that. I applaud Instagram. I do not think this is a free speech issue, but people might disagree with me.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the whole free speech angle, I don't know. I guess the way I think about these kinds of things is if I'm going somewhere and making a post and there's associated posts nested underneath that, like, it's almost like I own that, even though I realize I totally don't. Like, I know that the service kind of owns all of the stuff that happens on there, and they have, you know, the overarching, you know, ability to decide one way or the other. But as a user, like, being offering controls that are beneficial to users and that make them feel like they have a little bit of control over this stuff. I don't want to see that word. I don't want to see that kind of speech in my thread. I think, you know, to a certain degree, because I started it, I own it to a certain degree, and I should be able to at least decide how that is managed within the controls that they're given. So, yeah, I would absolutely agree. I'm happy that Instagram's doing this as well.
Yeah, I was thinking, is this a good tool for parents? You know, I think of Instagram as one of the first social networks that kids go on. It certainly was with my kids. And, you know, you should probably have your kid have a closed account. Like, I have a closed account. Like, I have to look at everybody, you know, I don't have an open Instagram account. I mostly say yes to everybody, but I look at, like, oh yeah, who wants to follow me? Okay. Mm-hmm. But you know, you could make your own list of words that you wouldn't, want your kids to see. I mean, it's not the answer to everything, but I was thinking, you know, if you're already trying to choose who their, you know, friends are, if you're only going to let them, you know, interact with people they know, hopefully the people they know aren't, you know, using all those words. But I'm thinking it would be great to use certain, like, I'm thinking of certain derogatory words towards women, which would be nice to have that list. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll be doing it on my Instagram anytime soon because I have a nice community on Instagram.
Yeah, but more controls are always better, I think. So
yes,
good luck.
Well, NPR reports on a new study that says Uber and Lyft have had no effect on drunk driving fatalities. The study by the it was published in the American Journal of Epidemiologists, found that quote, Uber services in a given metropolitan county had no association with the number of subsequent traffic fatalities, whether measured in aggregate or specific to drunk driving fatalities or fatalities during weekends and holidays. So this was interesting. By all means, take Lyft and Uber if you're drunk, or call me. I will pick you up. But there yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But there is still more room for improvement. We can't just say, like, Uber's doing it. And Uber has said that they've given anecdotal evidence. They've worked with Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. You know, and I support that. You have to definitely take Uber. But I think that their evidence isn't exactly accurate that Uber is, you know, making even a dent in the problem with drunk driving.
Yeah, Uber has said that their numbers show that their peak hours of use are during those nighttime, air quotes, drinking hours, let's say. And also 80% of their users have reported using Uber at one time or another to, you know, instead of driving when they happen to be drunk. So they've got that, but that doesn't necessarily correlate the other way in which, because it exists, it's, you know, cutting down the number of drunk driving the way you would think. I would think that it would have some sort of an impact, and maybe not now, but maybe eventually. Maybe the solution is this kind of future that we've talked about in the past where, you know, ownership is a lot less of a thing that we just do, and more so it's just the broader kind of rollout of ride sharing. And as that number gets bigger, I imagine I would guess that would cut down the incidents.
I would hope so. I mean, what really will cut down the incidents is self-driving cars. Robots do not get drunk, in my experience. So that's
for yes.
Future's
weird. That's all I'm going to say. But you never know.
I think what's happening is here, like, yes, maybe a lot of people are thinking like, oh, well, I'll go out. I don't have to worry about not drinking because I can just take an Uber. Whereas those people would have said, I'm not going to drink, or I'm not going to drink very much, so that, you know, if Uber didn't exist. So those people weren't going to drink and drive anyway. I think what they said is there's a lot of people when they're drunk, they're not thinking, oh, well, I'll take an Uber. They're thinking, give me my keys.
Pretty much. That's exactly what they sound like. You make a very good impression of a drunk person.
Thank you. I don't know how.
don't leave it to somebody who's drunk to have the best judgment in the world as far as like whether they should not drive versus paying some money to let someone drive them home. I suppose that's not the best position, you know, to... I guess you just can't expect somebody in that position to have the best judgment.
No.
But you would hope so. I would certainly hope so.
But it is one of those unmentioned things. And we talk about like, oh, well, with the trolley problem and, you know, all these like, you know, theoretical problems with the self-driving car. Imagine getting drunk drivers off the road. That is a wonderful future.
That is. I agree. And pedestrians. Microsoft has already admitted that its smartphone business would be taking a backseat to other platforms that it's working on, an acknowledgement that it's simply not performing well in the mobile phone market, to say the least. In May, the company announced that it would be laying off 1,850 employees in its smartphone hardware business and sales divisions. And now, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, it appears Microsoft has plans to lay off an additional 2,850 employees from those divisions, and particularly also Microsoft Salesforce. 900 employees have already been notified of Microsoft's layoff plans. And basically, this just kind of completes more or less Microsoft's process of kind of doing away with the remnants of the whole Nokia acquisition/failure.
Yeah, I mean, they now only employ 114,000 people worldwide, which was a much smaller number than I thought. There was still that Nokia that was not a good deal.
That was not very good.
But if you look at it in terms of Ballmer wanted to buy Yahoo for $50 billion, so mm-hmm. He didn't do that.
Nokia prevented him from dropping $50 billion on Yahoo. That's probably the headline right there.
Yeah,
this is really just a big part, Satya Nadella just kind of undoing the mess that Ballmer left for him with Nokia. Windows Phone right now has less than 1% market share worldwide, at least in the first quarter. That's compared to Android's, 40-some-odd%. iOS is right around 15%. So, I mean, eclipsed totally, I mean, marginal at this point. And, Microsoft has a new strategy right now that they're working on. It has less to do with kind of this hardware mobile division stuff, and it has more, at least in the mobile space, to do with creating solid apps so that they can get their services and their software on other platforms. That seems to be working out pretty okay. At least it does from a mindshare standpoint. People are kind of getting used to these high quality apps coming out and looking forward to them. I know I'd like anytime one of their new apps gets released on Android, like I rush to install it just to check it out because they're usually pretty cool.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's and we also hear about the Surface phone. That's that's probably going to be for the enterprise. It's not going to be a consumer phone, but that is some, I don't think that'll be a big deal since they're these employees that were laid off won't be working on it. Right. But if you are out of a job at Microsoft, you might consider heading across town to work at Amazon. The company hired approximately 23,700 employees worldwide just in the second quarter. They now have 268,900 employees. That's double Microsoft, more than double. GeekWire says this is a 10% increase of employees just in the last 3 months, a 47% increase in the last year. And Amazon also has passed ExxonMobil in market cap as of this morning. So this includes full and part-time workers, but not seasonal employees. And most jobs are in fulfillment.
A company as large as Amazon increased their workforce by almost 50% in a single year. That is crazy.
It is crazy.
That is pretty nuts. Amazon actually added more employees in a single year than Alphabet has in total. So there you go. Fulfillment. A lot of those jobs are about fulfillment. Amazon Prime, that sort of stuff. They're moving so much product these days. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, right? Amazon has had three consecutive quarters of record profit. And even with all that happening, they've still almost doubled their workforce. It's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
And some related Amazon news. ZDNet reports that with the better than expected quarter, Amazon has also seen a rise in the U.S. government requests for customer data. The transparency report they released last night showed 1,803 different requests compared to last year's 851 requests. The requests come only from Amazon Web Services, and the company did not say whether they would expand the transparency report to requests made of information contained in the Amazon Echo.
It's like voice queries with Amazon Echo.
Yeah, I mean, that's Amazon knows that my Echo knows a lot about me.
Right. So I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I'm assuming. It's not listening to me all the time, that it's only listening to me when I'm talking to it. But sometimes that blue light comes on and I have no idea if it's listening or not.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of disconcerting. Mm-hmm. Up next, Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica knows how big your room needs to be if you plan on getting in on the PlayStation VR action later this year. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. If you've ever gone through the mortgage process, you know it's not a walk through the park. It's a walk through your file cabinet, basically. You have to dig through all these things to find all the information that you need in order to facilitate the mortgage process, and that can just be a big pain. It's no fun. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. If you hate searching through those endless stacks of paperwork, old files, all that stuff that you need to do this, with Rocket Mortgage, you can just share your bank statements, your pay stubs at the touch of a button. That's going to help you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet, just kind of kicking it on the couch, watching Stranger Things on Netflix. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, it's time for Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica to get all gaming news up in this piece. What's up, Sam?
In this piece? Goodness, man, you are going nuts today. I can't handle all of this. Hello.
I thought I'd introduce you as if you were either a wrestler or a UFC fighter. Do you feel tough now?
I actually have just a tiny bit of stubble on my face. So if we want to get that sort of Hulk Hogan thing with the blonde hair and the mismatching gristle right there, if you want to go back to that 90s Hollywood Hulk Hogan era, I could do some news, brother.
Excellent. That's the kind of attitude I was looking for. All right. So first of all, we now know what kind of gaming room PlayStation VR users are going to need. Is it quite as demanding as, say, the HTC Vive, or is it pared back like we expected?
Well, this is interesting. That was one of the things that broke today, was the fact that there's been a space announcement. If you want to get into virtual reality with your PlayStation, as opposed to a more expensive computer or a super cheapo Samsung Gear VR, you can do so with PlayStation VR beginning this October. They haven't listed the exact release date yet, but a pamphlet started going out with information. And that information showed a diagram that was not 100% clear about the space, but it did suggest about 9.8 feet by 6 feet total space. that you need to be able to sit in. There's a 2-foot dead zone that can be seen on the screen if you're watching the web version of this, the video version of, so that because the camera has a certain dead zone, you can't get your hands or your web, headset, your VR headset right up to that zone. You're going to need to be able to move your arms around and move your head around. So they're suggesting that you put your chair in the middle of this 9.8 by 6.2 foot square, which is quite a bit of space. I think a lot of people expected it to be as simple as just sit down and play. You don't have to clear out a whole bunch of stuff is sort of the expectation. And this is sort of suggesting that Sony needs you to be aware that its tracking camera is specific. You can't be too far away from the TV. You can't be too close to the TV. You need to be just right, and you need to have just enough room to move around. Some of the games have Move One controllers, which are kind of like the Wii Remote, where you can move your hands around, and it has little glowing bulbs that are recognized in virtual space. Job Simulator will be coming to PlayStation VR. It's already out on the HTC Vive. And that's a game that uses hands very extensively for you to pick up and throw all the random things, and it's a virtual replication of a weird future. So that is quite a bit of space. It's actually kind of similar to how much space the Kinect demanded, which at the time when that first came out, people were not really into how much space it demanded, that you needed to be about 6 feet away from a television for it to even recognize you. That's a lot of living room space for some people. That's going to require having the couch be pushed back a little bit or all these sort of things. So I honestly think it's going to take being with the games to see how restrictive that really is. I don't think you have to clear your floor necessarily like you do with the HTC Vive, because you're going to be sitting in a chair, and it encourages you to sit in the chair. There are certain games where you don't have to be in a chair, that you stand up. And the instructions actually say things that if that's the case, you're going to need to move your camera in order for it to sense the entire body. So this is just the beginning of virtual reality, the sort of growing pains that come from a platform that's a little funky. PlayStation VR in particular is cheating a tiny bit to get down to its cheap price point of $400 for a starting kit attached to a PlayStation 4, which is, you know, $300, $350. That's the cheapest high-end VR experience yet, but you're going to get a screen that's not quite as good, and you're going to get sort of these weird tracking issues, which are requiring you to be that close to the camera.
Yeah, you were saying move the camera while standing. Is that to say that when you're playing the game, you're seated for the majority of the game, and then you get to a standing part, you actually have to move the camera then, or is that setup?
No, this is for separate games that will be a specific kind of standing game. No, but you would be expected, especially with the headset on, to start wobbling around and moving a camera over there. That'd be terrible.
All right, I was a little worried when I heard that. I mean, with this kind of trickiness, does that kind of spell, I mean, does that concern you for the general user? It really sounds like it's going to be, at least to a certain degree, somewhat finicky. And
yeah, absolutely. I think this is, that people need to be prepared for the finicky world that is first generation VR. So that's what I'm saying. They're going to put this on. The screen may not blow them away. The screen is going to have a screen door effect where you can kind of see pixels. And this sort of you can't be seen at all angles. There will be times where you might, if you play a game where you have to turn around, you notice how you can't see my face anymore? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a camera that's essentially just like that. So if your hand goes the wrong place with PlayStation VR, all of a sudden your VR face disappears. This is going to be a real issue depending on the game. People are designing around it and trying to get it down. All I mean to say is that at preview events, I've run into issues here and there. How it turns out in the final product remains to be seen. But definitely anyone who's getting super, super stoked about PlayStation VR, check your expectations a tiny bit and measure your room.
So what about this remain seated whenever possible? I mean, with that, the Vive, you don't do that. I mean, are they different games? Like Job Simulator, there's a lot of moving around and walking around and going to the copy machine and stuff. Will that be the same in PlayStation?
So that may be a standing game that has not been announced. But a lot of the games are designed to be sitting, so that you have these wands, but you're not getting up and moving around. In fact, a lot of Vive games have been sort of adjusting to this. These games where you stand in one place and then you can teleport by pointing and aiming at a thing. That pool game that I demoed a while back where I wore that ridiculous jacket is mostly designed to where you can stand in one place in your living room and warp around to different points of the pool hall, of the billiards hall. So I think that VR makers are just aware that people have small rooms and don't necessarily want to walk around on their feet, you know, and accidentally run into furniture and cats. So I don't think this is going to affect games that much. But if you are expecting the kind of game where you can really jump around in real life and dodge enemy fire and shoot guns like crazy, you are not going to get those kinds of games on PlayStation VR as much because it doesn't have two discrete tracking dealies on opposite ends of you. Having only one camera is going to limit the kinds of tracking and the kinds of motion that are available. There will be some standing stuff, but it's going to be a little slower. You're not going to be able to dance around and shoot at bad guys in an eight-player multiplayer match. That's going to be more of a sit-down thing, often with controllers, and that's the stuff that can make you motion sick, as in Oculus Rift games. So that's a big question mark. I really am. I'm going to be curious. I'm going to be playing the heck out of this stuff when it comes up in October, and I've been to preview events, and things have felt good, but it's not a one-to-one. It's not exactly like the Vive.
All right, so next, tell us a little bit about the controller customizations like the Xbox Design Labs offerings. What it reminded me of was Moto Maker, Motorola's kind of, interface for tweaking your Motorola phones. Kind of like that?
Indeed. It's the Xbox Design Lab was announced at E3 this year, and it allowed you to go and make your own controller design, picking from 7 different discrete options. You could change the front face plastic, the back face plastic, the top bumper and trigger assembly, the joysticks, the D-pad, that ABXY grid, and those two, the mode and start buttons, which used to be select and start. You can see there are some examples of designs I made in the interface. This one right here, black, orange, and white, is an Ars Technica style design since that's Ars Technica's colors. The next one I lovingly called Clown Fart, which is bright yellow, pink, blue, purple, orange, all the colors clashing as intensely as I possibly could make them. I actually wanted to make that one very badly, but my coworkers vetoed it. The one that comes afterward is a lot more modest, where I simply picked colors that matched. I had the bumpers and triggers match the joysticks, and I had the buttons and the D-pad match the back. So you get this sort of gray, white, red, semi-unified design. But it lets you sort of make whatever the heck you want. The results can look good and they can look bad. The gray, white, and red one turned out really nicely. It turned out just having 2 to 3 dominant colors and making them all match up really worked well. The gray pops very nicely. The red pops really nicely. However, you can't apply all of the color choices. There are 15 in all to every single part of the controller. So, for example, the joysticks, they can only be about 7 colors, and many of them are just different versions of dark. So you end up having, if you want to make a unified piece where the joysticks and the ABXY match other things, you're a lot more limited. The all-white construction, I found, does not reflect white kind of funny. And black on the bottom didn't quite look as good. Ultimately, the web interface only tells you so much about how this controller is going to look in real life. So I think it's a really cool option that's been put out there. These aren't shipping to customers until September, but Microsoft was nice enough to let Ars Technica get a crack at the first wave of them. And I think it's cool if you can go on the website. I think if you just Google Xbox Design Lab, that's better, or it's xbox.com/designlab, something like that, where you can go through the web interface, make stuff up. The biggest thing I would say about that interface is it's got an all-white background. And chances are, when you're playing a game, you're not holding a game controller against an all-white background. You've got it on a couch, on a table, or in your hands. So you might want to, I wish Xbox would do this, but I really do wish they would make it so you could take that design and put it on a different background, or make it look like it's in hands, or use, there's a 3D effect as like that, but it's just not the same as having it in real life. I actually said that I had controllers. They're on the other side of my office right now. I would actually have to jump up and go and grab them. But it's a pretty good indicator what you can see right there on the screen of both that interface and then how they turned out at ArsTechnica.com. That review has a ton of photos of Zooms, if you missed any of the ones that we showed here in the video version of this cast. $80 to get a controller, $90 if you want to have it engraved, to have a little phrase put at the bottom between the D-pad and the second joystick. I don't think that text, $10 extra, is worth it. The text is very gray and flimsy to read. There's certain light where you just can't see it at all. It's just not very bold. You're better off getting a Sharpie out and etching something very carefully yourself than paying $10 for Microsoft to do so kind of crappily.
And then I suppose the final kind of point on this, because it's a controller, how did they perform?
They are pretty much exactly the same. I have another one. Here's a hint of what I'm working on this week. This color suite is from the Xbox One S, which I'll be talking about next week. But the biggest difference, you probably can't see it on webcam because it's a white controller, but it's dimpled. There's a little bit of a dimpling on the back here, a texture, which means when I'm holding it, and I get really sweaty, it grabs onto my hand just that little bit easier. It's just got this little tiny, tiny ridges, little goosebumps on there. So when I'm holding the controller and I sweat because I am a sweaty controller person because I'm an Irishman, it stays in my hand a little firmer as I'm trying to get that high score or whatever. And beyond that, the other difference is that they've added Bluetooth functionality to it. That being, you used to need an adapter or a cord to make an Xbox One controller work on your computer. Now, Microsoft has talked a lot about Xbox on Windows. They really want you to feel comfortable taking your Xbox experience to your computer because they realize that's one thing they can make people like Windows 10. So Bluetooth lets you do that in a way that doesn't require an extra dongle like they used to do if you want it wirelessly. So the problem is that Bluetooth functionality, it might not work for every computer. You're going to need to upgrade to Windows 10 in order to take advantage of Bluetooth on the newer controller. So for anybody who likes to use these with a Mac or with their phone, you're going to get some weird button assignments. I tried syncing this up to my Android phone, and it worked. But I had to go into each app and individually map out the buttons and assign them randomly and weirdly. So those are the two main differences. Feels a little more comfortable and gives you a Bluetooth option. So if you want to play some of these 4- or 6-player games on computer and you've just got a bunch of these laying around, you have an easier way of doing so.
Excellent stuff. Sam Moscovich, Ars Technica. Tell people where they can follow all your awesome work.
They can come over to my house here in Seattle and just watch me work. They can also find me at SamRed on Twitter. ArsTechnica.com has my review of the Jason Bourne movie that comes out today. I like to party poop when it comes to Hollywood movies. I think it's just because I'm assigned all the ones that are sort of eh. I swear I like movies, but Jason Bourne is not it. It gets a lot of its techno babble wrong. It's the kind of movie where geeks will be annoyed and where mainstream people will just think it's taking way too long to get to the action. So anyway, find me at the theater. Find me at Sam Red. Find me at my house. I'll see everyone soon.
All right. See you later, Sam.
Take care, Sam.
It should be noted that so far on today's episode, you have offered to
drive people home
and their around, time. And Sam has invited people over to his house.
Yeah, we're a very friendly show.
We are.
And we love your feedback. We got feedback from Russell Williams, who wrote about Facebook's death grip on our birthdays. This Facebook birthday thing is yet another example of how unsocial, fake these social networks and technology is making us. Perhaps I'm the grumpy old man in the corner, but what the hell's wrong with a calendar? I just looked at my calendar, realized I missed a friend's birthday yesterday, and sent a quick email with belated greetings. Personally, I'd much prefer a genuine message a day late than a herd-like farce book greeting.
Yeah, I agree with this to a certain degree, just in the sense that like for a few years, the whole Facebook birthday thing, it was nice to know, and I would always like reply. Now I find myself like tapering off, like I'll see someone's birthday, and I'm just like busy, and so I say I'll do it later, and then I don't end up doing it, and then like I have a little bit of guilt or whatever, but I don't know, like. And I also almost kind of feel like on the other end, they're kind of like, whatever. Of course, I'm going to give Facebook happy birthdays. You know, like it doesn't have that magic. It doesn't have that, oh, thank you, really, type of quality. So I understand where Russell's coming
from. Yeah. I mean, what I said yesterday was like Facebook is monetizing our guilt.
Yeah,
and it would behoove us to really think about that every time we think, oh. I mean, to me, like unless I have something else besides happy birthday to say to the person, then I probably won't anymore. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I don't know if I said this on the show, but I got in a car accident. I'm fine. But, you know, somebody, my neighbor texted me the next day, like, how are you feeling? And that was like so much more worth more to me than any happy birthday, you know, because it's like that person was thinking about me, worried and asked how I was doing. You know, we're like saying happy birthday on Facebook is really just the least you could do.
Well, and not to mention, just using that as an example, like they sent you a text message, which is different from sending a message to the entire world that follows you,
right,
but to you also.
Yes.
Saying, see, I'm inquiring about her health. I actually care. See, everyone, how I care?
Yeah.
You know, sending that message directly to you actually tells you, like, that's actually the purpose. That's
right. That's
the reason that they're messaging you.
Mm-hmm. And nobody
else knew.
So it
changes the message.
Yeah, no one else knew until I just announced it on this podcast.
Well, there you go. But thankfully, you are okay.
Yes.
scary stuff. TNT's fan of the day is HexDSL on Instagram, who sent us this picture. HexDSL is actually a YouTuber with a focus on Linux gaming. So if you want to find HexDSL, I guess search for HexDSL on YouTube find walkthroughs on gaming on Linux. So thanks for sending in the photo of your battle station, as we'll call it. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Peach, Miitomo. I'm sure there are others. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it if it's on one of the main ones. If it's on Miitomo, we probably never find it.
No, I won't. Okay. I was never on there. You never saw me. And finally, the next web says Disney has a new patent for a technology that might track us through our shoes while we're in the park. They already have that magic band, the wristband that lets you skip lines, while the company also collects information about you. The patent application says, and I quote, this is so confusing, the method includes capturing by a foot sensor a first foot shape corresponding to at least 1 foot in a pair of feet of a guest, and capturing by a camera a first foot appearance corresponding to at least 1 foot in the first pair of feet receiving guest data from the guest.
I realize patents just kind of cover the gamut, but I'm not sure who ever thought of, like, how, what? I just don't even understand why this is necessary.
I know. Well, they say that, like, they really said that they think using shoe recognition is better than using facial recognition because shoes are very different from person to person, like, as if faces are not. I don't know. I think they would be using this because facial recognition is a little quagmire of legality now, I think.
That's a good point.
But yeah, so they take a picture of your feet and then they correspond it with your favorite Disney character, where you are, your favorite food, and then they track you around and see what you're doing. Little robots do.
Yeah, you mentioned the My Magic wearable. Disney rolled that out, I want to say it was like 3 years ago or something like that, only at Disney World. And it did a lot of things, or it still does actually. Tracks location, so a little bit of that. Facilitates payments, hotel room access, ticketing, FastPass, all these kind of integrated things. Now, I think a couple of months ago, they basically admitted that, like, though we still want to do the service, we're not going to do the band anymore because everybody has smartphones and that kind of does all this stuff. So, which makes me even more kind of confused by why you would track shoes. But I guess tracking shoes requires no upfront cost in creating hardware. So there's that. I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's just very confusing.
It's just a patent.
Yeah. And I'm also trying to think, like, you're talking about the difference between facial recognition and
shoe recognition.
I don't know. Like, maybe there are enough differences that you could track that, because shoes, you know, have very distinct and rigid, you know, detail to them. You know, like certain colors, you know, hard lines defined to separate the two, versus faces that maybe at a distance aren't as easily decipherable? I don't know.
I don't know. Every one of my daughter's friends and her all wear white Converse. So
yeah, well, like, there's your, that's the ultimate challenge is how do you tell the difference between those? Oh, there's a scuff on the toe.
Right.
All right, that is it. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
But what we would really love for you to do is subscribe to the show. You can subscribe in whatever podcast catcher you use. If you're confused and you want to find one, go to twit.tv/TNT. It'll give you all the ways. And if you want to tweet at me to ask how you subscribe, I'm at Megan Maroney.
Or to ask for a ride home.
Right.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Mario for running the words on the prompter. Thanks to everyone here that helps us every single week. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you on Monday. Bye, everyone.